You're listening to the Net Mums podcast with me, Wendy Gollidge.
And me, Alison Perry. Coming up on this week's show...
You know, we all go through a stage where we rebel against our parents. You know, what must it be like for them being my children? Like, when I talk about wellness and health and happiness all the time...
Oh, God, Dad's talking about gut health again.
Exactly.
But before all of that...
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Net Mums podcast. Now, I'd like to kick off, Alison. I want to talk about teens and phones, because I saw in the news this morning there was a whole town trying to get parents to ban them until year nine, which I'm fully down for, might we add. And my daughter's school banned them completely as of the start of this autumn term. And there isn't a day goes by on Net Mums where we don't get some sort of story about managing kids and smartphones. So I wondered where you sit on the smartphone.
So my eldest has just turned 14, and I feel like we've just got to this situation where it's just become the norm for us to give our year six or year seven kids a smartphone. And then maybe by age 13, 14, they're on social media. But even if you make the decision not to give them those apps, they're sat on the bus next to a friend who is on TikTok or who is on Snapchat. And I just feel like, as parents, something has to change. I feel like we need to all come together and create some kind of new normal, because it's all just, you know, getting too much and kind of traveling away from us, and we can't get control of the situation. And it kind of terrifies me.
I'm pretty sure our guest is going to have an opinion on this. So I'll let you do his very shiny showbiz intro.
Well, I am very excited to chat to today's guest. He is brimming with wisdom, his own and the nuggets that he has gleaned from the many guests of his hugely successful podcast, Feel Better, Live More. Dr. Rangan Chatterjee is also the author of several books, and in 2025, he's heading out on tour. I'm going to be there front row. Rangan, welcome to the Net Mums podcast.
Thank you. Thank you guys for having me. Alison, Wendy, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
Now, no pressure, but we're expecting to walk away from this feeling like new versions of ourselves.
Yeah.
So just from the conversation.
Yep.
Just from what you tell us.
Okay. even before doing anything, just from conversing together. Okay, great. No pressure at all.
None whatsoever. Now, I know you recently started working on a TV documentary about teenagers and smartphones, and... as I've already said, there's some stuff going on in my house with smartphones at the moment. How big a problem do you think we have with this young people smartphone issue? What's the solution?
Okay, how big of a problem is it? Okay, for me, I think the way we introduce technology to children, including smartphones, is probably the most urgent, pressing societal issue out there. I think it really is important for a whole variety of different reasons. There's pretty good evidence now on the short-term effects of too much use of smartphones and technology, particularly in the evenings, right? Focus, attention, distraction, what they are being exposed to when they go online, right? So I think we can all sort of understand those things, and maybe parents have seen that with their own kids as well and thought, wow, it's very hard to talk to them when they've got a smartphone in their face, because that smartphone is more appealing to them than any other human being. And frankly, that's the same with adults, right? The amount of patients over the years who were having marital issues, and a lot of it came down to the smartphone being the third person in their marriage. These things are designed to be addictive. So I think we've just sort of ended up in a situation where 15 years ago or so, these things didn't exist, right? We didn't have to make decisions as parents, should we be giving our child a smartphone or not? And in the space of those 15 years, society has changed rapidly. I think COVID accelerated this, where because of the lockdowns, because schools were closed, technology came into our schooling in a big way, and I think an inertia has set in, and we haven't really reset post-COVID, nor have we asked ourselves the question, like, what is actually good for our kids? I think many of us are feeling the pressure from the children around us, what other kids are doing. No one wants to feel as though their child is being left out, right? So there's the short-term issues. But for me, there are these kind of longer, bigger picture issues, which I don't think we're talking about enough, which is, you know, what have they been exposed to, right? So I'll give an example. There's some good research showing us that about 1 in 10 9-year-olds in this country have now seen pornography, okay? By the age of 11, that accelerates up to about 25%. Okay, so 1 in 4 of 11-year-olds, we think, in this country have now seen pornography. But let's go one step further. We also know from some research that if you are a first-time visitor to some of the world's most popular pornographic websites, 1 in 8 of the videos that you are served will show either violence or non-consensual sex. So I think most of us would think, I don't want my 9-year-old or my 11-year-old seeing stuff like this. But let's just fast forward that 10 years when these children become adults. What is their expectation of an intimate relationship? What is their idea of how they need to perform when they're in that sort of setting later on in life? So I think that's one issue which we're not talking about enough. But also, I don't know if you've looked at many children's schools bus stops recently. Like when I drop my kids off at the bus stop, kids are not talking to each other anymore, right? So at my children's bus stop, where they get on to go to high school, I honestly don't think I've ever seen kids talk in the last 3 years. Like, it's that rare, right?
Everyone's yesterday morning, I commented, I was driving past the bus stop and they've all stood in line like this on their phones.
Yeah, and we can't blame them, right? These devices are addictive. Their prefrontal cortex, the front part of their brain, which is how we as humans make rational, logical decisions, that's not fully developed till the age of 25, right? We struggle as adults to manage our own relationship with these smartphones, and we've got fully developed brains, I think, most of the time, right? They haven't. But look, that bus stop thing's really important because, like, when I was at school, I remember being at the high school bus stop, and there was, you know, there was a girls' school on there, there was a boys' school on there. If I had an option to hide myself away in my private world, I probably would have done it. But you know what? Because there's no option, you end up chatting. You end up chatting to girls, which you might find as a boy quite intimidating at that age. But you know what? You learn how to do it. And we're missing those skills. And there was a fantastic book in 2016 by this MIT professor called Sherry Turkle called Reclaiming Conversation. And one of the things I remember from that conversation is from that book is really quite startling, which is in her research, she's shown that a lot of kids these days, they prefer electronic communication to real life communication. Okay, why is that? Because in real life, like now, we have to interact in real time. I may make a mistake. I may get something wrong, right? But they know on a text message, on a WhatsApp, you can edit it. You can get it absolutely perfect for 10 minutes and then send it. And so we are at risk of creating a whole generation who don't have the basic communication skills that we've always had as humans. So I'm really concerned. You said, what is the solution? I think the solution is really, really tricky because it's out there at the moment. But let's not forget, smoking used to be recommended by doctors. You could go into your doctor's surgery and the doctor would be smoking, right? That's now not acceptable. Things can change. Junk food was allowed in everywhere in the 80s. Now we're learning, look, there's some real problems with this. We've got to be a bit more careful with how much we introduce. So I am hopeful. I think parents, the amount of parents who've told me that they have lost their children to these devices, right? And a lot of them, and you know, without saying too much about the documentary that I'm filming with China 4 at the moment, which will probably come out later this year because it's such an urgent issue, the parents I spoke to were like, I've lost my kids to technology. And all of them were like, I don't really want them on it, but I'm giving the smartphones to them because all their friends have got them and I don't want them to feel left out. So I kind of think
that's the biggest problem.
It's not as hard as we think, Wendy, because actually if parents are recognizing the problems, right, if they're only giving it to other kids, to their kids, because other kids have it, we could as a society take a step back and go, okay, is this what we really want? What is schools? Like, I don't think there's any case at all for secondary schools to allow smartphones being used in the day. I know that's controversial to some people. To me, it's not.
People say the safety aspect. So me as a parent, I'm thinking it's actually quite handy being able to see that my 14-year-old's got on the bus or got on the train or whatever it is. But kids got to secondary school before smartphones existed, right? So there, it must be possible.
Well, also, just turn them off at the door. Our school has just introduced this thing where they turn them off. And if you're spotted on your phone, it gets confiscated.
Yeah.
They've come really hard line on it.
I think we need to go one step further, Wendy, actually, because the schools which, and the school that my children go to, their policy, because Alison, you make a great point, you know, we times have moved on. We do like to know that our kids have navigated the bus or the train or the walk to school and got there safely. But a lot of schools now are having to give, when you get to school at morning registration, you hand your phone in. So you don't have it in the day. It's not like off in your pocket or your bag. I mean, frankly, a lot of schools where they do that, people are still using it. They're going to the toilet. Like, there's actually toilet problems at schools now because people are spending so long in the toilet in the cubicle because they're texting, they're going on TikTok, they're going on Snapchat. So I think it's a simple policy is take them off them when they come in and you give them back at the end of the day so they can use them to navigate their transport. But whilst they're at school, they can't use them. And I honestly believe that will be the norm. Within a few years, I think there is a growing tide now of worry and anxiety, and there's more research coming out. So, look, I could talk to you for 3 hours on this, but in essence, I think it's a big problem. But I think us as parents have got to come together and go, listen, that is another way here.
I feel like if we don't come together and come up with some kind of joint solution, this is going to be the thing that our kids have therapy about. Like, we think, you know, oh, we're doing parenting so much better than the generation before us and we've got it all sorted. No, this is the thing that our kids are going to be, you know, resentful in 20, 30 years' time. Can't believe you let me have a smartphone. This is the impact it had on me.
So we're already getting it. There's already 21, 22-year-olds coming out saying, like, I wished my parents had never allowed me to have this stuff. I wish they stopped me from going on social media. I have seen in my practice over the years several suicidal adolescents, right? One of them ended up in A&E trying to harm themselves on a Saturday. I saw them on the Monday afternoon. And I promise you, within months, I managed to help them have a completely different relationship with themselves and with life by cutting out social media and technology in the evenings, right? It is that profound. And here's another point which we haven't mentioned, right? When you're 12, like just imagine that when we were 12, 13, 14, 15, right? We're trying to fit in. We're trying to figure out who we are. You know, what is our place in the world and in our social circle around us? Social media is fundamentally a performative medium, right? I'm not blaming people for performing on that. It's a performative medium. You don't post your dirty washing, right? You post the best aspects of your life. You know, why would you post your dirty washing? Who wants to see that? But if you're 13 and 14 and you're a bit insecure and you see all of these perfect lies around you, your self-esteem, your feeling of who you are, like it is, I don't think it takes, there's a lot of research there, but I think just on a human level, we're like, God, we as adults kind of struggle with that sometimes.
We can't do it.
We struggle with it.
Yeah.
So of course the kids can't. So I don't think, and I think these technology platforms are frankly pathetic with how they police this stuff. I mean, it's complete nonsense. I mean, WhatsApp's meant to be 13. Well, all the netball clubs around me, they're all communicating on WhatsApp groups at the age of 10. So everyone's clearly getting around that. Very, very easily. And I'm not saying WhatsApp is necessarily a problem in and of itself. I think it's more the Instagram, the TikTok, the Snapchat. But I think it's a big problem. But I'm very, very optimistic. And I think when this documentary comes out, I believe from what I've seen so far, it's going to really ramp up the national conversation on this.
Good, good. So let's move on to another big question. What do you think is the biggest, smartphones and technology aside, what do you think is the biggest unhelpful habit that most of us have today?
I would say, and this might be a little controversial, but I would say it's going onto your smartphone as soon as you wake up.
Mm.
Now, let me explain why I picked that, because there was a few things that were vying for attention, including alcohol before bed and what that can do, or too much alcohol, I should say, in the evening, which we can come to if you guys want to talk about that in a second. But I think the most important practice for our health, our happiness, our overall well-being is a daily practice of solitude. Okay, and I'm very aware that I may be talking to a lot of busy mums who go, are you kidding me? Like, when am I going to get any time to myself? My whole life is about doing things for other people, for my children, maybe my partner and whatever, right? But I've seen it time and time again that we're living in a world where there is just a barrage of information coming in at us at all times. So much of our thoughts, our behaviors, our actions are downstream from the content we consume, right? I really have seen this and I really, really believe this. So just imagine two scenarios. Scenario one, you wake up and even for 10 or 15 minutes, you don't go on that device. You make a cup of tea. You read a little bit, you have a little stretch, some of your favorite yoga moves, whatever it is that tickles your fancy, right? You do that without looking at your smartphone. And then compare that to you're in bed, you're a bit knackered, the alarm's gone off, you switch it off on your smartphone, you go onto the news website and see all the horrific things that are going on around the world. You go onto social media and see someone's been a bit mean about your last post and you see a bit of bullying going on somewhere else. And you know, your mindset has been massively influenced by the content you've consumed, right? So is it a surprise then that you're a bit short with your partner? You're a bit ratty with your kids? You don't feel good about yourself? It's not really a surprise, because if you've just seen the worst that humanity has at the moment on the news or on social media, in a very important part of the day, I believe you're playing catch up for the rest of the day to what you started your day with. And it's bloody hard, right? So if I bring my phone into my bedroom, I will look at it. I've written 5 books and I've written about phones and all the problems. I'm a human being, right? These things are addictive. So when I'm being my best self, I leave my phone in my kitchen in the evening and I don't bring it into the bedroom. When I'm not being my best self, it comes into my bedroom and I struggle. So I think what you do first thing in the morning is really, really important. And I have had busy single mums in my practice before who I've convinced and persuaded to have a 5-minute morning routine, and it has transformed so many aspects of their life. I believe it's that important.
Mornings, that's the key. Right, noted. Liz Earle came on the podcast and she said the same thing. And she wanted us to go outside and stomp in the grass.
She said tongue scraping, Himalayan salt in water, and yeah, getting outside and feeling yeah, the grass under your feet.
Standing on the lawn.
Hey, listen, I do that stuff, right? So I, first of all, I've been developing what I do first thing in the morning for about 10 years now. And it really mirrors it really started when I had kids, because what I realized, look, my kids are 14 and 11 now, okay? So I've been a dad for quite some time. I realized very, very early on that I'm a better human being in every single way when I've had time to myself first thing in the morning. I've realized that I'm a better father, I'm a better husband, I'm a better doctor, I'm a better colleague. And so I've realized that that's very important for me. So I've gradually shifted over 10 years or so. I've reorientated my life in such a way that I do get up early. And I do spend quite a bit of time by myself each morning. I appreciate not everyone can do that, okay? And there may be differences between men and women, and then, you know, who's responsible for what at home. I recognize all those things. That works for me. But I think even if you're a busy mum who thinks that you don't have time, I mean, I can tell you, like, I have this framework for morning routines, right, for people who are interested. And I call it the 3 M's, okay? So I think if you're trying to create a little routine, it doesn't have to be the morning, but if you're trying to create a routine that you do each day for yourself, I think about the first M, mindfulness, the second M, movement, and the third M, mindset. Okay, you don't have to do them all, but it's just quite a nice balanced way of looking at it. So I do my mindfulness. First thing, I get up, and I get up at 5, okay, but I go to bed early as well. I come down in my pajamas into the living room and I will meditate for about 10 minutes. Then I come into my kitchen in my pajamas and I make coffee. And while the coffee brews for 5 minutes, which is how I like it, I don't go on Instagram or email. I do a little strength workout in my pajamas, right? So I'm not having to create extra time. Those 5 minutes are going to happen anyway with me waiting for the coffee. So I use that time to have a little workout. And then my coffee's ready just the way I like it. And I'll write in my journal, or I'll read some, you know, I've got a few books kicking around, and I'll read some uplifting pages from a book. So I've done some mindfulness, some movement, worked on my mindset, and then I start my day. And the day
is 20 minutes. It's not long.
You could do it's 20 minutes. Well, I tell you, you say it's 20 minutes. I had this patient about 7 or 8 years ago. Okay, single mum. I think she had 2 kids. She had really bad skin. I think it was eczema from recollection. But what was very clear to me is that there was a huge underlying stress load in her life. And it was quite clear to me that the underlying stress was a significant contributor to her skin problems. I'm not saying the cause necessarily, but a significant contributor. And she was rushing around. She had to get the kids ready in the morning. I said, like, would you consider a morning routine? She goes, oh, Dr. Chachi, I don't have time for that. I said, okay. And I spent a bit of time with her. I said, what about 5 minutes? She goes, you think it'll make a difference? I said, look, I don't know, but why don't we give it a try? And we created a 5-minute routine with those three M's, right? So the first minute was a breathing practice that I call the 3-4-5 practice, where you breathe in for 3, you hold for 4, and you breathe out for 5, okay? Very simple, helps lower stress, helps you relax. I've been teaching this to my patients, to adolescents, to stressed out executives, to busy moms for years. It works very, very quickly. So she did 1 minute of 3-4-5 breathing. I said, what kind of movements do you like? She said, well, I used to love yoga. I haven't done it in years. I said, okay, do you have some favorite moves? She said, yes. I said, okay, 2 minutes of yoga, right? That's it. Like literally 2 minutes. And then for the final M, it was mindset. And for her, she wrote down some positive affirmations. So, you know, I'm calm. I'm a capable mother. I can cope with what life has to throw at me these days. You know, you can call this stuff cheesy if you want. It absolutely works. I felt it myself. There's good science on affirmations, and I've seen it with patients. She started doing that for 5 minutes every day. Within 2 weeks, right, her skin problems, her skin flares had gone down by over 50%.
Wow.
Right? Because stress is such an underlying driver. But more importantly than that is that that created a positive ripple effect in her life. This is the big problem about change that we think about. We think change has got to be this big life overhaul. I've got to spin 4 times a week, run a marathon, yeah, do the park run.
All or nothing.
All or nothing. I used to fall into that trap, but it just simply doesn't work for most people. I'll tell you who it does work for. If you have gone through a significant life experience, a divorce, a bereavement, you've lost a job. Yeah. If those things have happened, I have seen people turn their lives around overnight. But if that hasn't happened to you, and that's not your underlying drive behind you wanting to change, it's very hard to do those big lifestyle overhauls. So that 5 minutes in the morning showed her what calm and control could feel like. Then she started off her own accord, walking for 15 minutes every lunchtime. Right. And there was a whole series of other positive habits that came off the back of it, but it started with those 5 minutes. So I am really, really passionate that these small things done consistently really make a difference. And again, I know I'm talking to a lot of busy mums and parents who may feel that they don't have time. My challenge to everyone listening, if you want to make a change in your life, right, it's this: pick one small thing, 5 minutes max, that you think is going to help you. Journaling, meditation, yoga, jumping jacks, whatever you like doing, and commit for 7 days to do that 5 minutes every day. I guarantee you are going to feel differently about yourself, about your life after 7 days. Because when you say you're going to do something and you do it, you send yourself a strong signal that, you know what, I can trust myself. I can rely on myself. Like, even if the kids have got all these clubs they need to go to, even if work's busy, life is stressful, I still found 5 minutes a day for me. that is priceless. And that's what I do in my own life as well.
So I'm going to take you away a second to your tour and talk about your upcoming tour. Are you going to be interviewing people on stage? Is it going to be like this? Are we going to get all of your expertise coming out on stage? It's quite different to podcasting. So who can we expect to see and what are you going to be doing?
Okay, so first of all, there's not going to be any guests at all. Okay, so it's not... Yeah, I'm trying to create something that I don't think has been done before in the UK. I'm trying to create a really transformative, immersive experience of people where they come in with their friends, with their partner. They come in feeling one way and 2 hours later they leave feeling completely different and hopefully inspired to go, yeah, you know what? I can do this actually. Yeah, life is tough, but I know now what I need to do to improve my health, my happiness, my relationships. So, you know, I know there's a lot of live podcast tours out there where people bring on guests and stuff, and that was an option for me and I did consider it, but it's not what I want to do actually. Look, my podcast is my podcast. We spend a lot of time and effort and energy on it. It goes out. People listen to it. You know, that's great. This is going to be very different. You know, I'm working with an amazing theatre director. There's going to be music, lights, audio visuals. And yes, there's going to be a lot of my advice, tips, hopefully inspiration. But the real goal is going to be in a very soft and kind and compassionate way. I want everyone in each of these theatres to go away thinking, you know what? Yeah, I can do this. I can be the architect of my health and happiness. And I really believe that's something that, I mean, how do you say this? Like, I think we all have to tune in to actually, what is our gift? What's the thing that we can do for people that is uniquely us? And I feel one thing that I can offer people that people have been saying to me since I've been in public for maybe 10 or 12 years now is that, you know, they often say, Rongan, you make me feel as though I can do this. You make things really simple. So even though I'm busy, I feel, yeah, I can actually do that. And I want to put that together in a theatre show. And so we're being quite ambitious. You know, there's we're going to take people on a journey. But some of the tips I mentioned and plenty more will be there throughout. But it's not just like health. It's also happiness. It's going to also be relationships. You know, how do you deal with conflict? How do you become a better listener? You know, why is it we struggle to make the changes that we say we want every January? And by the end of January, we're back to where we started. So my sixth book comes out in January. It's called Make Change That Lasts. And I feel there's going to be content from all of my books weaved together in a narrative. And I'm really, really excited. You know, I love being on stage. I love seeing people in person. It is a big tour, right? I was quite nervous when we booked it. You know, they're big theatres and there's 15 dates. But, you know, if it is even 50% of what I think it's going to be in my head, I think people are going to find it really, really valuable. And they're going to have a good time at the same time.
I think it sounds amazing. Like I said, I'm going to be front row. And even though you haven't got guests, I'm still going to come. But you have had so many amazing conversations on your podcast, like so many wise, clever people imparting, you know, their wisdom. Which one conversation has had the biggest impact on you? Like, which one did you come away from thinking, right, this is interesting?
We keep making him choose one.
I know. I feel like otherwise we'll be here all day.
I mean, I feel like I'm warming up and now I've got to choose one conversation. Okay, so we're coming up this, I think at the start of December will be the 500th episode of the podcast, so which is pretty nuts to think of how it started almost 7 years ago. And I feel very, very lucky I get to do this and basically talk to whoever I want each week about whatever I want, which I feel I'm very, very grateful for. But there have been quite a lot that have really fundamentally shifted how I look at life. But the one I think more than any other, which has changed me, like literally changed me, is a conversation I had about 3 years ago with a lady called Edith Eger. Now, when I spoke to Edith, she was 93 years old. But rather incredibly, when she was 16 years old, she was growing up in Hungary and her family got a knock on the door. And essentially, they were put on a train and taken to Auschwitz concentration camp. So she spent 12 or 13 months in a concentration camp in the most hellish conditions, seeing people dying. Her parents literally were murdered within an hour of getting there. The most incredible story. And you think about, God, my son's 14. I'm thinking, what, 2 years' time? He'd be 16 when Edith went into Auschwitz. It was phenomenal. But why did it change me? I'll tell you why it changed me. So on the day she gets there, her parents are told by Dr. Mengele, who's known as the Angel of Death, to go left, and they go into the camp where they're basically burnt. Okay, she goes with her sister into another part because they're younger and they can now work and be of use to the camp, basically. She got asked to dance for the senior prison guard, that the guy who sent his mum to the gas chamber, she had to dance for a few hours later. And she said, when I was dancing, Rongen, I wasn't in Auschwitz. I was in Budapest Opera House. I had a beautiful dress on. The orchestra was playing. There was a full house. So she said to me, Rongen, before my mum left, the last thing she said to me was, Edith, just remember, nobody can ever take from you the contents that you put inside your mind. Okay, so when she's dancing, she goes somewhere else in her mind. Then she tells me, after a few weeks, she starts to see the prison guards as the prisoners. She goes, they're not free. I'm free in my mind. These guys are not living true to themselves. They're doing these horrible, awful things that they'll have to live with for the rest of their life. And I'm free. They're not free. And then the final thing she said to me, I'm trying to summarize a two-hour conversation here, right? But at the end of it, she said, Ronga, I have lived in Auschwitz, and I can tell you this. The greatest prison you will ever live inside is the prison you create inside your own mind. And I'm not kidding you, right? I remember when that conversation ended, like it was in the evening, and my kids were waiting for me to go and put them to bed. I couldn't do it. Like I was so moved. I literally have changed from that conversation, and I honestly believe that's one of the reasons I feel so happy these days, is because I realize that everything in life comes down to the story we tell ourselves about it, and we have the power to create those stories. So if I'm ever, let's say someone cuts you up when you're on your way to school to pick your kids up, and you're like, oh, stupid driver, they shouldn't have a license, or whatever it might be, right? You've created emotional stress there. You think it was that external event that did that, but it wasn't, because not everyone will have that same reaction. You've created that with your response. And what Edith taught me, and which I've applied every day since that conversation, is whenever I get triggered, whenever something happens in life that I don't like, and sometimes I can't do it in the moment, sometimes I don't make the best choice in the moment, and I reflect on it that evening, but I go, what's a different story you could put on this? Oh, that driver. Maybe that driver thinks they're going to get fired and they're rushing to their job. Maybe that driver's daughter was up last night with Eric and they're knackered. Like the truth actually doesn't matter. What matters is the story you tell yourself about it. That's freedom. That's empowerment. There's many more things I could share about that, but that was the conversation.
Yeah, that's fascinating.
If I could only save one conversation from my entire back catalog, that would be the one.
She stayed with you.
Yeah, for sure.
So we all listen to you. We all listen to your advice and to your words of wisdom on the podcast, but do your kids listen to you?
So this is a great question. Okay. I often think about what will happen to the kids when they're in their 20s. Because I talk about all this stuff with them all the time and have been doing so since they were really little. When a podcast guest is coming to the house like the next day or that morning while we're all having breakfast, I'm like, they're like, Daddy, who's coming? I'm like, oh, this guy's coming today. Oh, what are you going to talk about? I say, well, these things, what do you think? They'll give me ideas. My daughter will say, oh, why don't you ask him this, Daddy? I'm like, that's a really good idea, darling. I think I'm going to ask. That's a really good question. And so, do they listen? Look, they're like all kids. They like to do what they like to do, right? If they're out with their friends at a party, they'll want to go to Pizza Express or wherever people are going to have that food. But by and large, I'd say yes. But also, and I think this is the really uncomfortable truth, I think, as parents, is that, look, this is what I've learned in 14 and a half years of being a dad now, is that kids don't do what you tell them to do. They do what they see you doing. And so I realized, because for my wife and I, how we parent our children is the most important thing to us. Over everything else, it's like, how are we bringing up our children in this world? Are we bringing them up to be kind, respectful, compassionate? And I've learned that actually I have to model the behaviors that I want them to pick up. If, going back to full circle to smartphones, if I don't want them on technology all the time, well, I also can't be on technology all the time, right? And again, I don't say that to blame anyone. I know life is tough. People live stressful lives. They might have to get back to emails. I get all that. So I'm not saying it with judgment. But I think my kids do follow the advice. We eat very, very well at home. You know, it's a struggle at weekends to get them out for walks. You know, we're like everyone else. Come on, guys, we need to go out. I don't want to. It's raining. I'm like, yeah, we have all those struggles like anyone else does. But we do prioritize health in my family, which is unsurprising given it's my whole career and what I talk about and write about. But I do wonder sometimes when they're in their 20s, you know, we all go through a stage where we rebel against our parents. You know, what must it be like for them being my children? Like when I talk about wellness and health and happiness all the time.
Oh, God, Dad's talking about gut health again.
Exactly. Exactly. So I don't know. I think like all parents, I'm doing the best that I can. And I hope that these lessons stay with them when they're old enough to make those decisions for themselves. But, you know, I guess only time will tell.
Yeah. Now, when you had Philippa Perry on your podcast, who is one of my absolute all-time favourites, you both agreed that the best parenting tip was sort yourself out first. Do you think that as parents, we all need some kind of therapy just to, I guess, make us the best parents that we can be?
I don't necessarily think we all need some kind of therapy, but I definitely, you know, that conversation with Philippa, I'm guessing was at least 5 years ago. So
yeah,
I can barely remember. I might go and listen to it this weekend now.
Yeah,
I can't remember what was in it. But I do still maintain that the best parenting advice is like sort yourself out first and then you're going to be
Put your own life mask on. Put your own oxygen mask on the plane.
Yeah, but it's also, I think the people closest to us often see the worst of us. Mm. You know, they're the ones who trigger us or our unresolved issues, usually from childhood, often come out with our partner or our children. So I do think that supports another question. Do we all need a therapist? Look, I'm all about empowering individuals. I think therapy can be incredibly beneficial for many people, most people, perhaps all of us. But at the same time, not all of us have access. Not all of us have time. Not all of us, if we don't have access to the NHS, not all of us can afford it. And I do believe there's a lot we can do ourselves, right? Going back to what I said before about a practice of solitude, why solitude is so important, and that could be a walk, meditation, breathwork, journal, whatever, sometime by yourself where you're not consuming stuff from the outside. Because if you're never reflecting on your life, if you're always in your life, you can never really make those significant changes. Like if you, for example, were a bit short with your children, like, you know, all of us probably are at some point. And you know, if you have that practice of solitude, you go, yeah, you know what? The reason I reacted like that is because I was stressed from work. It's not my child's fault. That was my stress that came out there. And if you get that self-awareness, it does two things. Firstly, next time you're in that situation, you're going to create a little space where you go, oh, wait a minute, I don't need to react like that this time. You might still do sometimes, but you start to create that self-awareness, which I think is really important. And secondly, you can actually go and apologize to your children. You know, it's one thing I'll give my wife credit for this. She really taught me that, you know, let's not put that image of perfection to our children. If we get something wrong, let's go and talk to them and tell them. And so I have in the past said, hey, guys, you know, I'm really sorry about yesterday. You know, this is what happened. I shouldn't have done that. I'm really, really sorry. I'll try not to next time. And I think it's quite a nice thing. You know, I very much grew up with perfectionist tendencies. Like, I felt I had to be perfect in everything that I do. And I think, yeah, wrong, and that's fine. It's had a toxic effect on you and your inner well-being for much of your life. don't pass it on to your kids. So, you know, I've tried to sort that stuff out. And another key thing for kids, for parents, which relates to parenting advice, is I think this is so important. If you have a negative inner voice, which many of us do, and it pops out sometimes, like, oh, silly me, or oh, I can't believe you did that, you can't do anything. Here's the problem. If you say that in front of your children regularly, what inner voice do you think they're going to pick up? Right? They very much absorb what we do. So I think in some ways having kids is the best incentive to actually sort your own stuff out. It's like, no, I don't want to pass this stuff on to my children. And so for me, that's definitely been the case. It's been like, no, you've got to sort this stuff out, because, you know, these are two malleable minds who will literally absorb everything that they see you and mummy do. So I do still maintain that, you know, kind of sort your own stuff out. I think it's really important. You don't need therapy. You know, if you can get therapy, great. But don't let your lack of a therapist be an obstacle to you sorting your stuff out. You can journal, you can reflect, you can listen to podcasts I very purposely do a long form podcast. And, you know, people in the industry told me, oh, no one's got time anymore. They've got to be 40 minutes, got to be 45 minutes. It's just simply not true, right? You can have great podcasts in 40 minutes for sure. But if something's good enough and it's meaningful enough, people do listen to long episodes. And since I went to an hour and a half, sometimes 2 hours, my show has got more and more popular because they're really deep, authentic conversations. And what I found from speaking to so many listeners around the country is that through conversations, yeah, we can do it with our friends, but if they're hearing me talk to a guest and having a really deep, intimate conversation, they start to see themselves in that conversation, and they start to reflect, yeah, you know what, I do that. In some ways, it's really nice because you're not directly being spoken to, so you don't feel threatened. You're just like, oh, yeah, you know what, wrong is it? I think I do that in my own life as well. And it really has the power to create change. So therapy, great if you can, but if you can't, there are still many other ways that you can make progress.
And that idea of perfectionism is really interesting. You've previously said that parenting is your biggest job of all in life, and it's one that you take very seriously, and it's clear that you do. But it feels like parenting has reached another level in the modern world. So much admin with old school apps, so much awareness of what we're feeding them, mental health checks. I mean, a lot of it is good and we should be doing it, but it makes the job so much harder to get right. And we're so much more aware now of all the things that we're potentially doing wrong. What do you think? How do you parent in a way where you're not seeking that perfection, but you're trying to do the best job you can?
Yeah, I agree. You know, but I think this goes beyond parenting. I think this is, like I was mentioning before, the world of information overload, where we are more empowered than ever before, but we feel more pressured than ever before. That can be health or it can be parenting. And I think we have to tune out the noise sometimes. And actually, we've all got unique lives. We've all got unique pressures. You know, some of us are in single parent families. Some of us are two parents. Some of us are, you know, we co-parent with people we're no longer together with. You know, we've got to find what works for us. You cannot do everything. I do think having some time each week where you're not scheduling yourself and scheduling your kids with loads of different things is really important. Connecting this to smartphones at the start, right? One of the other things I think is an issue with giving children smartphones early is, let's think about the state of well-being in adults in the UK and, frankly, many Western countries. There is one bit of research that was published last year that shows that 88% of UK adults have experienced some degree of burnout in the past 2 years. Now, that's a staggering statistic. And I don't know what it really says about the state of us as a society when that many adults are experiencing burnout. So one of the issues in burnout, yes, there can be workload from your boss, which is unmanageable for sure. But one of the issues is we struggle to switch off and just be. We're trained to always have to do something. You know, even for our relaxation on Sunday, we have to do. It's do, 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 do. And I kind of feel that smartphones in some ways are also training that from a young age. It's like I need to constantly consume. And then when I'm bored of this one, I go to that one. I go from that one to that one. And then I go back to WhatsApp and then I go here. And you're really going to struggle to be well in any aspects of your life unless you can actually just sit and do nothing. You know, remember the Sundays when we grew up, the shops were closed, right? You couldn't buy stuff. You know, supermarkets were often shut or just open for like half the day. And it was inbuilt that you had, yeah, you had a busy week, but you would have downtime at the weekend or at least on a Sunday. Many religions have this built in, right? Like the Jewish Sabbath, like where Friday evening to Saturday evening, nothing, no cooking, nothing, right? So I kind of feel, in back to your question, Alison, how do we manage it? Well, listen, you can't do everything, right? You're never going to get every single right. Take the pressure off yourself. And I do think if you can have that one day or that one afternoon with your kids where you put the tech away, you're either out in nature for a walk or you're sitting around playing a board game, you will get so much from that, the connection, the bonding, the switch off, that will help everyone. You know, whether you're ticking all the boxes off or not, that I think is one of those key practices each week that kids benefit from, but we also do as adults as well.
There's a common theme here, isn't there? We keep coming back to tech and phones. This is it.
It is, and it's, I just don't think we have to accept the norm. Just because it's normal, it doesn't mean we have to keep it there. And I know for many years now, my mates who've got kids older than me would say that the number one source of conflict in our house is to do with the kids' use of technology. Right? But you've got to understand, or I believe we have to understand, that we cannot blame the kids. It's not their fault they can't regulate their own behavior on these devices. We as adults can't. So I do think we have to make some really big decisions as a society and go, what is it we really want for our kids? Do we want them all seeing pornography and hardcore pornography at the age of 11? I mean, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure out what kind of impact that could have downstream or 10 or 15 years for harmony, relationships, and all kinds of stuff, right? And I think we can stop it. I think schools can make big but tough decisions and say, yeah, bring them on the bus, bring them there. But when you get in, there's no phones during school time, and then we'll give them back. So you can do whatever you want with your kids as they're coming home. I think that personally is a very, very reasonable suggestion. There's an account on Instagram called Smartphone Free Childhood, which is blowing up, and I love it. It's run by this mum called Daisy, and she recently launched something called Parent Pats, where parents in different schools, I think all the schools are on there, people are coming together and committing, saying, no, we're not going to do this, and we're not going to give our kids smartphones at 11 or 12. We're going to wait until this age, and that's what we need. It's not an individual issue, this. We need a collective movement.
Her campaign is so good, isn't it? We interviewed her on NetMums. I chatted to her a few months back when she first launched it, when the WhatsApp groups were just blowing up out of nowhere. It feels like we need that person to have the idea that we can all then jump on and develop.
So I do. I really believe, like, it's in the press every day at the moment. You know, there's more and more research coming out, you know.
Well, the Australian Prime Minister is talking about making it illegal for children to have smartphones under 16 in South Australia.
Yeah.
And that's the kind of level it's got to. It is, the conversations are happening, I think, but we've just not got over the line yet.
I think it's a generation of kids. Maybe my kids are in that age bracket, but I think older, maybe 5-10 years older than my kids, who have been the guinea pigs, really, unfortunately. Like, they've been through it. And obviously, we can't turn the clock back and change what has happened. But we can make a change for future generations. Like, I've got mates who've got kids who are like 2 or 3 or 4 years old. And they're like, hey, Rongan, I'm so glad that this is happening now. So that by the time my son or daughter is 10, 11, 12, hopefully the societal norms will have shifted. But as I said right at the start, I believe this to be the most urgent societal issue of our time. I feel we're fundamentally changing the nature of childhood and how human beings interact with each other. And I don't think it's too late to change it.
Well, I personally feel like a completely new version of myself. Thank you very much.
I genuinely do. Right, I'm not being funny, but I'm going to go off here and I'm going to come up with my new morning routine. I'm going to do, is it the 3 M's you said, Rongan?
Yeah, but again, if 3 M's is too much, just do 1 M. It still works.
I'm going to try the 3. I'm going to do my 5 minutes. I'm going to, honestly, I'm not even kidding. I feel like I'm going to be a new person.
I feel like this is one of the most useful podcasts we've ever done. Thank you.
Yes, thank you so much.
Well, listen, it was a joy chatting to you both. And I hope some of the information is useful for people. And, if anyone's interested, hopefully the tour next year will be a lot of fun. So, come with your partner, come with your friends, and it should be entertaining.
There'll be these two saddos at the front.
Yeah, we'll be there. Front row.
Doing this, like, hi!
Oh, do. And then we'll get you up on stage if you want and do something. No, okay, we won't.
Thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, thanks for having me, guys. Thank you.
Don't forget, you can get in touch with us on all social channels, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok. Just type in NetMums and you'll find us. And if you liked what you've heard today, we'd love for you to give us a 5-star rating, press the follow button and share the podcast on all your socials.